Once again, to another edition of what I call American Exposé, people. Ooh, boy, it's the 3rd of November. The indicators of global governance is everywhere. Most people haven't even heard of global governance before. Most people don't have a clue what it means. And there's where the crux of the situation lies, people. Not too many people understanding the big picture in place, the totalitarian agenda in place, the maneuvers of elitists to control us all. Much in the news, I'm always overjoyed to look at the website AmericanExpose.com, and everything's set up so if something does happen to me, everything rolls, everything continues, talk show hosts continue, the website continues, and that's just the way people have to do things. You just don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. Here we see on the website, AmericanExpose.com, American spelled with a K, there are signs of the economy is shaking off the effects of devastating Gulf Coast hurricanes. The nation's retailers reported solid sales gains in October. Oh, really? A key gauge of activity in service industries posted a big rebound and productivity advanced at the strongest pace in more than a year, according to reports issued Thursday. Is this to be believed, listeners? An analyst managed to find a silver lining in reports that were less positive, noting that while storm-related job losses kept rising and are now at 514,000, the increases are slowing, they say. Well, this is not to any benefit to those that have lost their jobs, listeners. Roughly 500,000 people have lost their jobs. What happened to all the people that were affected by these three hurricanes, and we might as well call them four hurricanes now with Beta, which I've seen very little information about. So they viewed a bigger-than-expected drop in factory orders for September as a temporary setback rather than an indication of more serious problems in manufacturing. Many of the nation's big retailers, including Walmart Stores Incorporated and Costco Wholesale Corporation, reported stronger than expected sales as the arrival of cold weather boosted demand for winter clothes and falling gasoline prices put shoppers in more of a spending mood. Nobody's in a spending mood these days. It's all by demand. Demand is necessary to keep things rolling in families, especially those that have the families. Let me get a little preoccupation taken care of here. Okay, so we have this situation with many that have lost jobs. It says here that the Institute's non-manufacturing index rose to 60 last month, significantly higher than September, when the impact of the hurricanes and surging energy costs had helped push the index down to a reading of 53.3, whatever that means to us. Quote, whatever impacts Katrina had in September were wiped out in October, and the nation's service and construction industries are moving ahead smartly, end quote, said Joel Noroff, chief economist at Noroff Economic Advisors of Holland, Pennsylvania. Wall Street focused more on the positive economic news rather than a worrisome $2.03 surge in oil prices, which pushed a barrel of crude up to $61.78 a gallon. I mean a barrel. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 49.86 points to a close at 10,522.59. I don't know how this information is going to affect us in the bottom line. The Labor Department said the productivity, the amount of output per hour of work, grew at an annual rate of 4.1% in the July-September quarter, and the best showing since the spring of 2004, and much better than the 2.6% rate economists had been expecting. Rising productivity means that workers can be paid more without boosting inflation pressures. I see. The report found that unit labor costs declined at a rate of 0.5%, the first decline since the second quarter of 2004, and a hopeful sign that rising labor costs will not force the Federal Reserve to more aggressively fight inflation pressures. The Federal Reserve. The Fed boosted interest rates by a quarter point for a 12th time on Tuesday, and many economists believe that gradual pace of rate increases will continue for Chairman Greenspan's last two meetings in December and January. Greenspan delivered an upbeat assessment of the economy on Thursday in congressional testimony, saying, quote, the economic fundamentals remain firm, end quote, in spite of the adverse effects of the hurricanes. I saw part of that speech. He was really beating around the bush in many topics and subjects. Alan Greenspan was. And that's the way these individuals work and maneuver. The Labor Department counted an additional 18,000 layoffs linked to Hurricanes Katrina and Rita last week, and 1,400 layoffs tied to Hurricane Wilma, which hit South Florida on October 24th. It continues. Analysts predicted that the storm-related job losses could rise further in coming weeks as more people displaced by Wilma make it to unemployment offices to file claims. Isn't this an amazing world we live in today, listeners? But at the same time, they took hope from the fact that the total of 19,400 storm-related claims last week was the smallest number in the 9 weeks since the government began tracking the impact of the hurricanes. Once again, weather modification, environmental modification, weather wars being and manipulated on us, which includes environmental wars and earthquakes as well. California should have an earthquake, or the West Coast should have an earthquake / tsunami by next May, in my opinion, the way things operate. By next May, a major earthquake should hit the West Coast. I don't know why I think that. Nobody told me this. Quote, Katrina and Rita effects still linger, though they are fading, end quote, said Ian Shepherdson, chief U.S. economist at High Frequency Economics in Valhalla, New York. Quote, claims will likely rise next week as the full effects of Wilma hit, but the downward trend is very clear, end quote. The 19,400 claims linked to the hurricanes were part of a total applications for jobless benefits of 323,000, the lowest level since the week before Katrina struck in late August. I see. Commerce Department reported that orders to U.S. factories fell by a bigger than expected 1.7% in December. Durable goods, items expected to last three or more years, were down 2.4%, while orders for non-durable products fell by 0.9%. But analysts said the weakness was likely to be temporary, influenced by a big drop in orders in the highly volatile category of commercial aircraft and hurricane disruptions at chemical plants and other factories along the Gulf Coast. Oh, yes. Very, very interesting. In the meantime, in the paper, and this is dated October 29th, Saturday, some of this I've saved for you, and I want you to hear it. I think it's vital that you hear some of this. Very important to connect these dots. UN helicopters ferrying supplies to South Asia's earthquake survivors will be grounded within a week and relief operations scaled back unless aid agencies receive more funding and donors make good on pledges worth millions of dollars, officials said Friday. Is this a fact? Is this the way it is? Is this what's really going on? See, when you've got refugees, when you create refugees, you create havoc and turmoil. You create chaos. Ordo ab chao was heard a number of times during Hurricane Katrina from government officials. And I think Governor Blanco was one of them. Order out of chaos is what she said. Well, that's the lingo of the Illuminati. People order ab chao. The warning comes with winter just weeks away and meteorologists forecasting a harsher than normal season in the Himalayan mountain region, worst hit by the quake. Already hundreds of thousands of people in Pakistani rural Kashmir are likely to face the cold without winter. And more than 2 million are in desperate need of food. That's 2 million people in desperate need of food. Can you believe this? 2 million. 2 million people, listeners. Just over there, 2 million people. It says the United Nations has received $70.6 million in cash and $46.4 million in pledges for earthquake relief. That adds up to 20% of the $550 million it says it needs for the next 6 months. The Donors Conference in Geneva this week drew an additional $580 million in pledges for victims of the October 8th quake. But those funds were not earmarked for the UN appeal. I see. What a way to go. What a way to be. How can this be, listeners? All this going on in this modern day and time. Weather wars, environmental modification, earthquake causing. We'll be back. Continue. U.S. retailers weather hard climate. From BBC News, listeners, BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, home of the Queen, home of Prince Charles. Oh, yeah, Prince Charles. What a piece of work he is. What a piece of work all these people are, listeners. And that's the problem. We aren't connecting dots, most of us. Most of us don't connect dots. And that is the big problem at this point in time. So, Walmart, Costco, and JCPenney all saw a healthy rise in like-for-like sales in October and are forecasting similar results this month, Retail experts thought the rise in gasoline prices and damage from the hurricane season would dampen trade. Well, the gasoline prices have come down again to pre-hurricane times, or pre-hurricane prices, mainly because demand and maybe the fact that so many people are waking up to the scams in place. The global scam called global governance. More and more might be waking up to this, people. Walmart, the world's largest retailer, said like-for-like sales, which excludes sales from new stores, has risen 4.3% last month ahead of market expectations. I see. The company's performance is seen as a barometer of the retail industry in the U.S., reported a 10% increase in total sales. Warehouse retailer Costco Wholesale also prospered, with sales in stores open for more than a year, rising 10%. And the beat goes on. Experts said a cold snap at the end of the month had helped them, while consumers had proved more resolute than imagined. Quote, consumers are hanging in there despite facing significant pressure on their discretionary income, end quote, said Ken Perkins, resident of retail analyst Retail Metrics, told reporters. Well, what does this mean? People are buying, but they're buying on plastic and probably increasing their debt. And that should be very, very important to consider. I think it's vital to connect dots, listeners. Vital. Without connecting dots, you can't understand the big problems that are facing us today. And I cover this today as well, but I need to cover this tonight also to make sure it gets the coverage it deserves. From the Earth Charter Initiative, listeners, it's a press release dated October 31st. The Queen visits Earth Charter Plus 5 in Amsterdam the 5th to the 9th of November. That's just 2 days away. It's a worldwide conference on implementation of sustainable development, listeners. The Worldwide Conference on Implementation of Sustainable Development. This is incredible. This is a big move. This is a major move. As we've had earthquakes, tsunamis, tornadoes, hurricanes, wars, more so than any time in human history in the last year that I can see. More creation of refugees than any time in history that I can see in this last year. I'm talking about 1 year from today, going back to last year today. I think we've had more devastation, more loss of jobs, more refugees created all over the globe due to wars, weather modification, environmental modification. So the Queen visits Earth Charter Plus 5 in Amsterdam in 2 days for the Worldwide Conference on Implementation of Sustainable Development, listeners. What is sustainable development? The code word for Agenda 21. What is Agenda 21? That is total control of every man, woman, and child on the face of the earth in everything they do, in commonality to communitarianism, which has reinvented communism today. This is what is so troubling to me. Her Majesty the Queen will attend the Earth Charter Plus 5 meeting at the Royal Tropical Institute in Amsterdam on Wednesday, 9 November. The mission of the Earth Charter is to create a fair, sustainable, and peaceful future for the youth of our time and future generations. During the anniversary meeting, the Queen will receive the first copy of the book entitled The Earth Charter in Action Toward a Sustainable World. The Earth Charter document has been composed after consultation involving thousands of people and hundreds of organizations throughout the world. And once again, that is the UN system, listeners. This Earth Charter document, which has been composed after consultation involving thousands of people and hundreds of organizations throughout the world. This is commonality, people. This is all about commonality and communitarianism. It was launched in June 2000 at the Peace Palace at The Hague in the presence of Queen Beatrice because of the deep involvement of the Dutch royal family and the charter, as well as the sustainable development The event will also take place within the context of the Queen's Silver Jubilee. During the meeting, a new phase of this initiative will be launched. And the impact as well as the future of the Earth Charter will be carefully addressed in working groups, presentations, and cultural manifestations. In addition, the Earth Charter Award will be presented to a person or organization that has been very successful in implementing the charter at a local or national level. Royal Work of Art, the charter symbolic depository, is the Ark of Hope, a maple chest which is on display from this summer in the Royal Tropical Museum in Amsterdam. It is painted with religious and secular symbols, plants, animals, and children. A copy of the charter, handwritten on papyrus, is kept in the ark, together with books made by artists and children, containing painted and written impressions of a better world. On 9 November, next, the winners of a children's drawing contest will present their drawings to the Queen as a contribution to her Ark of Hope book. The Queen will also present her self-designed book cover. And they have prominent people who are going to attend the meeting. And Stephen Rockefeller will be one of them. Jordan's Princess Basma Bint Talal, founder of amongst others, the Hashemite Fund for Human Development. Irma Woodseller, UN Special Ambassador for the Millennium Development Goals for Asia and the Pacific. Dutch Prime Minister Jan Peter Balkenende. Ruud Lubbers, libertarian theologist. Leonardo Boff, UN Special Ambassador Maurice Strong, primologist Jane Goodall, and Rabbi Aralan Sohentrop. Young people from over the world will also participate to present the voice of the future. The meeting is organized by the NCDO, the Royal Tropical Institute, Plan Netherland, and the Earth Charter Initiative. Admission is by invitation only. And that's the way it is with most and every UN event, and this is no different. So what is this all about, people? Totalitarian control of mankind, as we're being maneuvered and directed on a constant basis by the media. It is a real setup. I refer to Prince Charles, The Sustainable Prince by Joan Vion. It's chapter 5, entitled Global Governance. I'll deal with that tonight. But back to the news in the website, AmericanExpose.com. We see here from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Hurricanes and Katrina tore up about 100 square miles of environmentally significant marsh in southeastern Louisiana, federal geologists said Wednesday. Now, what are they going to do about this? They're going to turn it into a World Heritage Site. You wait. They will turn this part of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, the environmentally significant marsh in southeastern Louisiana, they will turn it into a World Heritage Site. You wait and see. Satellite imagery shows about 60 square miles of marsh were ripped up and submerged around New Orleans, said John Barris of the U.S. Geological Survey, with another 40 square miles turned into open water across the state's coast. Wetlands. At a meeting to discuss the damage, the U.S. Geological Survey said it's too early to tell how much of the open water will revert back to marshland, but the agency said, it's very likely that many new lakes will form. There you go, new wetlands. Some of the larger rips will remain as permanent ponds unless sediment is put in them or some appropriate restoration project is done, end quote, Barris said. And what did they say?
Oh, boy.
Can I possibly find that? Oh, luck of all lucks, I found it. I've saved the front page from Sunday, September 11th, 2001, for some strange reason. Not because it was the fourth anniversary of what happened in New York, September 11th, 2005. No. Making peace in the ruins, Hurricane Katrina. And what do they say here? And you've heard it before if you're a regular listener. While Americans watch the worst of New Orleans unfold, some experts insist the great jazz city can be rebuilt better than before. But cleaning up this mess likely will take years, with a new city slowly emerging in phases and wetlands replacing flood-prone areas. There it is. Wetlands replacing flood-prone areas. So we see right here, it just says it right in front of our eyes. Quote, some of the larger rips will remain as permanent ponds unless sediment is put in them or some appropriate restoration project is done, end quote. The damage adds to Louisiana's already dire coastal land loss. The state has lost about 1,900 square miles of coastal wetland since the 1930s due to levee building, oil and natural gas drilling, and natural causes. The agency had previously estimated the coast would lose about 650 square miles of marsh by 2050. Louisiana's marshes are a prime habitat for fish and a barrier against potential storm surges from future hurricanes. Quote, the enormity of the disaster is hard to put into words, especially if you've flown over the areas, end quote, said Colonel Richard Wagoner, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers District Chief in New Orleans. Wagoner oversees the committee steering efforts to restore coastal Louisiana. In the end, the damage may exceed 100 square miles of marsh lost, officials said. The storms inundated fresh marshes with salt water and killed marsh grasses, said Ronnie Pale, a biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. But it looks stone cold dead, end quote, he said, about the marshes. It will take another growing season or two to see if the marsh springs back, he said. We have all this going on, listeners, as a result of a hurricane and another hurricane and another hurricane and another hurricane. All could be steered out of harm's way. The technology is in place to steer hurricanes out of harm's way, and yet, what do? They came into harm's way. This is by design, is my point. This is all by design. Most won't want to realize this. Most won't know. They won't want to understand what I'm saying and what you're thinking, many of you. Regular listeners. But this is just the way it is. It's 2005. The maneuvering of people into island communities called sustainable developments has to be completed in 20 years. How else are they going to get people to move unless they burn them out or storm them out some way or another? Joan Vion, Prince Charles, the Sustainable Prince, Chapter 5, Global Governance, next.
Than you've ever before. Just trying to stay even with the Smith and Jones. Lately I've been thinking, what's the use? I'm hanging by the thread, but it feels like a noose. This is what I say.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
Who are you? That is the question and the name of the program. To learn what the question means and what the answers are, tune in every Sunday afternoon and Rice McLeod will give you the answers. Who are you? Check the schedule pages at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for broadcast times. We'll see you then.
Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you never see no more.
FirstAmendmentRadio.com has made available a very low-cost satellite system special just for First Amendment Radio listeners. In conjunction with Rick Satellite, you can now receive a complete system, including receiver, LNB, and small satellite dish, all for only $169 delivered to your door. Go to the FirstAmendmentRadio.com homepage and click on the satellite system link to order the First Amendment Radio satellite system from Rick Satellite. Or, if you don't do internet, call Rick Satellite at 816-228-1801 and tell them you need the First Amendment Radio satellite system. Go to our homepage to order or call Rick Satellite at 816-228-1801. First Amendment Radio receives no compensation for this service.
America, I'll live a life for you. America, I'll grab a whole life for you. America.
devastated by Poker Face listeners. Very important to hear that again. And we'll close out the broadcast with that. Vital. Before I get to global governance, alligator infection gunshot is the question by the Chicago Tribune. The official ranks of Katrina's dead include a New Orleans man fatally shot nearly a week after the hurricane struck, an elderly nursing home patient who died 16 days after the storm, and a toddler who drowned in a Texas hotel tub almost a month after being evacuated. As local and state officials struggle to assess the human toll of one of the nation's worst natural disasters, they're using widely varying definitions of what constitutes a storm-related death, a process that sometimes is yielding a confusing accounting of those killed. 2 months after the storm blasted New Orleans and the Gulf Coast, the death toll remains unknown, perhaps even unknowable. Most of the confusion lies with how to classify evacuees who died, many of them elderly, in what constitutes an indirect death. Did stress from a lost home lead to a suicide? Would the toddler still be alive today if not for the hurricane? Quote, an 89-year-old man with cancer is in hospice care and is evacuated to a nursing home. He dies. Did the stress do him any good? End quote, asked Don Moreau, operation chief of the East Baton Rouge Parish Coroner. Quote, short of 1-800-ASK-GOD, I don't know how to determine that, end quote. Unlike previous mass casualty events since the September 11th terrorist attacks or the 1995 bombing of the federal building in Oklahoma City, Katrina's victims are spread out over hundreds of miles and died from a variety of causes. Besides adding to the uncertainty over how many people were killed, the varying definitions will affect federal funding for funerals and recovery efforts. An accurate assessment is also essential for epidemiologists and policymakers seeking to develop plans to reduce the number of future deaths. I see. No single government agency is charged with determining the official death toll, now estimated by officials in Louisiana and Mississippi at nearly 1,300. But this total does not include evacuees who died in other states. Officials with the Federal Emergency Management Agency, meanwhile, say there have been 2,681 funeral benefit claims filed from around the country, roughly twice as many as reported victims. A FEMA spokesman said overlapping claims filed by multiple family members, claims filed for missing people who are not actually dead, and stress-related deaths have inflated the number of claims beyond the official toll reported by state officials. Families have not received funeral benefits yet, although the first checks, typically several thousand dollars each, will be issued soon. Nowhere is the debate more over the definition of storm-related death more apparent than here in East Baton Rouge Parish, where several hundred thousand evacuees fled. Local officials say there have been just five storm-related deaths. State officials, meanwhile, list 72 for the parish. Meanwhile, the state is counting any evacuee death prior to October 1st as a storm victim, including those who are murdered or die from long-term illnesses. Maru uses a stricter definition. Quote, if a tree falls on you, an alligator bites you, or you are a diabetic and can't get your insulin, that's a storm-related death, end quote. And this is according to this individual, Moreau. Quote, if you have lung cancer and you are in the hospital in New Orleans and you are safely transported to a hospital in Baton Rouge and you die here, I consider that storm-related, end quote. And that is common sense to you and me as well, I would think. Anyway, this is very easy to have predicted, which we did. You'll never get to the bottom of how many people died. And always keep in mind, these weather anomalies that are being created are all being blamed on global warming. That will come and deliver it to us in the near future. You just wait and see. And certainly we have other things to be concerned about. Bird flu is on the horizon. But let's get into global governance by Joan Vion and Prince Charles, the Sustainable Prince. As Prince Charles is here, he's probably going to attend the Summit of the Americas down there. and that more than likely will be the case, that Prince Charles is here as well as Gorbachev speaking here. I'm sure they're all going to meet down there in Argentina, I believe it's going to be. So what is global governance? And public-private partnerships and governance are one. It is on the global level that a number of key concepts and philosophies come together. Charles has adopted a very radical environmental agenda that calls for a planned society using the environment and sustainable development as the reason for the change in governance, or government, and freedoms. Public-private partnerships are the modus operandi to effect this change. The definition of governance by the UNDP, Chapter 4, that's the UN Development Program, is that public-private partnerships and governance, or government, are one. In other words, sustainable development equals governance equals public-private partnerships equals one, government. We will be controlled on the local from the global through public-private partnerships by passing the federal and state levels, rendering them obsolete. The Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum works very closely with the United Nations Development Program, the UNDP, and the World Bank, as well as a number of other multilateral and global agencies and organizations. The executive director of the UNDP is James Gustav Speth, S-P-E-T-H, who has held very important and key positions in a number of key radical environmental groups. In 1982, he was chosen to head the World Resources Institute, which was created by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, the IUCN. Appointed by Bill Clinton, Speth's term will end about the time Al Gore runs in 1999. When I attended the Rio Plus 5 conference in March 1997, Mr. Speth delivered what can only be called an important keynote speech on sustainable development and the role of both state and non-state actors in global governance. He said, quote, "Let me emphatically state that the global governance is not global government, but a set of interacting guidance and control mechanisms that include both state, which is public, and non-state, which is private, actors. Actors both public and private, both national and multinational. Global governance is here, here to stay, and driven by economic and environmental globalization. Global governance has coexisted for many years with strong sovereign states. International arrangements such as the Rhine and Danube Commissions existed since the early years of the 19th century to oversee transport on major rivers. They were joined in the second part of the 19th century by such agencies as the International Telecommunications Union, 1865, the World Meteorological Organization, 1873, the Universal Postal Union, 1875, a precursor to the International Organization for Standardization, the World Intellectual Property Organization, 1883. And the International Rail Transport Organization in 1880. In the early years of the 20th century, the World Health Organization and the International Labor Organizations were created in 1919. Each of these institutional innovations and the resulting international regulation reflect the reality that economic and other needs spur global governance. Today, the system of global governance is undergoing a profound transformation. At the qualitative level, non-state actors, mainly NGOs, which are non-governmental organizations and businesses, have seen their influence increase in global governance. Nor are NGOs the only non-state actors to participate in the evolution of global governance mechanisms. The phenomenal growth of multinational enterprise is a potent force in the global governance. The presence here of Klaus Schwab, founder and president of the World Economic Forum, and Stephen Schmidli and his colleagues with the World Business Council for Sustainable Development is ample evidence of this. Just as important, we look forward to a growing role in supporting the involvement and participation of NGOs and civil society organizations, including private business and foreign partnerships of many types. Partnerships, public and private, that are an integral part of the web of global governance and the glue that holds our troubled world together, end quote. From Speth's speech, We can see that the combination of partnerships plus governance equals one, government. Well, rumor has it that Speth will either head up Gore's election campaign or possibly be considered for the position of vice president. One wonders, after working so closely with Prince Charles, where Speth's loyalties will really lie. At the Habitat 2 conference in Istanbul, and this is covered in Chapter 6, the next chapter, the United Nations opened the doors for mayors to directly affect the formulation of the United Nations policy through Committee 2. What this really does is eliminate or bypass the state and federal levels in favor of local levels, which will carry out the United Nations agenda. That's very, very important, people. In July 1997, the United Nations held the International Conference on Governance for Sustainable Growth and Equity. The purpose of this conference was to provide a forum for representatives of governments, parliaments, local authorities, civil society, the United Nations agencies to share the best practices in governance for sustainable growth, which includes sustainable human development. The various forums held simultaneously were for ministerial senior officials, mayors, parliamentarians, and civil society. The Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum participated in the forum for mayors and the forum for civil society. According to independent journalist Linda Liotta, who attended the conference, quote, "The Secretary General opened the meeting by telling participants that you are the agents of change and of a new politics, and that good governance and sustainable development are indivisible," end quote. She told me, that's Joan Vian, quote, "The UN brought in the local level from around the world. For the first time in UN history, the opening and closing conference ceremonies were held in the General Assembly, giving special rights and recognition to the local level. The participants sat in places where the appointed UN ambassadors in the UN sit," end quote. Two American mayors attended. San Francisco Mayor Willie Brown said, quote, "I am delighted and honored to participate in this necessary conference. Cities are going to be where people actually live. Cities are going to be where politics of the UN, as well as the federal government, will ultimately be implemented," end quote. Seattle Mayor Norman Rice said, quote, "Sustainability today requires communities to constantly work toward a strong future through partnerships between government, business, labor, and the citizenry." Lastly, the UNDP, which partners with the Prince of Wales Business Leaders Forum, produced a policy paper in which Director James Gustav Speth wrote, quote, "We aim to be an impartial partner to governments, to civil society, and to private sector," end quote. The paper states, quote, "UNDP devotes one-third of their resources for governance," end quote, and, quote, "only recently became involved with legislative and judicial systems," end quote. The state of Maryland adopts public-private partnerships. In this, you'll hear an interview with Baltimore Mayor Kurt Schumacher in March 1997 at the Maryland State House, where he was lobbying for two bills that would set up public-private partnerships. And Joan Vian asked him the following questions. "Some people are concerned about personal property rights. Do you see that as a problem?" The mayor responded, "No, I don't think so. I don't think there is any intention to undermine personal property rights, but I think, like all rights that we have, there has to be some compromise between individual rights run up against collective rights. The local prerogatives will have to be compromised to a certain extent to deal with the greater good." Joan Vian asks, "Then, do you see collectivism as the new wave for the 21st century?" And Mayor Schumacher responds, "I would prefer to call it partnership. I think that's better. It's partners in progress, and that is what the governor is trying to achieve, and I support him." And Joan Vian asks, "You mean public-private partnerships?" And the mayor says, "Correct." And it's already almost time to conclude the broadcast. Time goes so fast, so fast. But let me get into this chapter 6 real briefly before we run out of time. In order to understand the power which Charles has, that's right, in order to understand the power which Prince Charles has, we must look at the increased strength of both the United Nations and transnational corporations. It is not enough to state Charles is powerful. One must explain how he is powerful in order to understand the magnitude of the day and the hour. Not only is the Rhodes legacy complete through the United Nations, but the apex of a global governmental structure is being revealed through his actions and activities. At the Gorbachev State of the World Forum in October 1995, which I attended, Zbigniew Brzezinski, former National Security Advisor under President Carter and Director of the Trilateral Commission, said, quote, "Finally, I have no illusions about world government emerging in our lifetime. Through a process of gradually expanding the range of democratic cooperation, as well as the range of personal and national security, a widening step-by-step, stone-by-stone, through genuine globalization, which is progressive regionalization," end quote. This widening is being done specifically through the empowerment of the United Nations system. Empowerment comes as a result of environmental treaties and conventions to which the countries of the world are somehow give their consent. This then requires an expansion on the part of the United Nations to operate and monitor how the countries are implementing the new agreements. Without the mantra of the environment, the United Nations would have no reason for expansion and empowerment. There are two very similar studies calling for some kind of expansion, renewing the United Nations system and our global neighborhood. That's right. There are two very similar studies calling for the same kind of expansion, renewing the United Nations system and our global neighborhood. They both recommend expanding the Security Council and eliminating the veto, adding a Sustainable Development Division, or expanding the Trusteeship Council to monitor the global commons, which we share, which is atmosphere, outer space, the oceans, beyond national jurisdiction, etc., and to monitor the progress of countries adopting sustainable development goals, adding an Economic Security Council, and giving the World Bank and International Monetary Fund vast powers over the world's economic system. A long-standing recommendation has been to add a People's Assembly. This call dates back to speech with Ernest Bevin, Foreign Secretary of the UK, made before the General Assembly, where he calls for, quote, "a world assembly elected directly from the people of the world, to whom the governments who form the United Nations are responsible," end quote. And she notes here, "do not expect world elections, but rather these representative people will be members of the UN-affiliated groups and organizations which comprise the People's Assembly." While I was aware of a number of recommendations, I had to call several months ago from a researcher in Wisconsin who explicitly told me he had found a 1988 chart showing the future United Nations. I quickly acquired the book and immediately saw the planned infrastructure of the new models of governance chart, which is reprinted with the permission of Gaia Publishing Limited, London, England. And it's here in the book, Prince Charles, the Sustainable Prince. Although it may appear to be complex, it is extremely important. When we consider exactly what the prince is doing, we must also understand the depth. Public-private partnerships have two major players, government and corporations. The UN is trying to acquire greater power in a number of ways, which includes the People's Assembly, while corporations are trying to pass the controversial multilateral agreement on investments, put Prince Charles in the helm, and you have a very complete picture. The only entities that will be sustainable are the corporations and the United Nations. So, as we're running out of time, we'll have to pick this up next week. I'll mark this point, and we'll just pick it up next week, because this is all vital information. as people go on and on and connect dots, as you should be doing too. From Reuters, U.S. President George Bush, preparing to visit Latin America, said the United States will not intervene in negotiations between Argentina and the IMF. And maybe so, maybe not. This is the setup scenario. This is global governance being engineered. The IMF, Secretary of the Treasury, U.S. Governor of the IMF. Every country has a governor of the IMF, and every country except communist Cuba that I see, for some strange reason. That's just amazing in itself right there. I don't understand that at all. But much information on AmericanExpose.com. Very, very vital that you connect these dots and spread the word about the website. It is growing. The information is monumental. I've never seen a website with so much information in my entire life, and I visited a lot of websites. This is the premier website of websites that I can see with information and documentation, and you must go there and support it and direct your thoughts to what's going on the website, AmericanExpose.com. Back to Poker Face. Let's hear it again as we wrap up the broadcast tonight.
America. Dominoes all together round the social land, the brotherhood. Come and take away my land, my promised land. I said, and come and take away my land from a foreign land. America,
I live and fight for you.
America,
I won't lie for you.
America,
I'm yours again.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it, it has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen, there's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty, to ourselves and to our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit